when America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries. Drive time.
I'm a flag-waving patriotic nephew of my Uncle Sam, a rough-riding, fighting Yankee man. I love mom and apple pie and the freedoms that we all enjoy across this beautiful land. I've worked hard and I'd fight hard for the old red, white, and blue, and I'll die a whole lot harder if it comes to where I have to. I'm a flag-waving, patriotic nephew of my Uncle Sam, a rough-riding, fighting Yankee man. And when I see old glory waving, I think of all the brave men that have fought and died for what is right and wrong. And when I see old glory burning, my blood begins to churning, and I could do some fighting of my own. I don't believe in violence, I'm a God-fearing man, but I'd stand up for my country just as long as I could stand, 'cause I'm a flag-waving, patriotic nephew of my Uncle Sam, a rough-riding, fighting Yankee man. Patriotic nephew of my Uncle Sam, a rough-riding, fighting Yankee man. And I enjoy the liberty of being what I want to be and achieving any goal that I can. I was taught to turn the other cheek, but Teddy used to say, walk soft and pack a big stick, but never walk away. And I'm a flag-waving, patriotic nephew of my Uncle Sam, a rough-riding, fighting Yankee man. And when I see old glory waving, I think of all the brave men that have fought and died for what is right and wrong. And when I see old glory burning, my blood begins to churning, and I could do some fighting of my own. And I'm proud of our birth. We've got the greatest country here on God's green earth. And I'm a flag-waving, patriotic nephew of my Uncle Sam, a rough-riding, fighting Yankee man.
Hi, I'm Christopher Hart. As you know, today is Veterans Day. So we here at the American Adversaries Radio Wrestling Network are dedicating and devoting our entire show commercial-free to our veterans, who are heroes and heroines, each and every one. This show is meant to make you laugh, make you cry, but most importantly, make you appreciate how very blessed by God that we truly are. We hope you enjoy the show along with us, and we'll be back in the saddle tomorrow and live at 5. And a special thanks to Johnny Guns, Jeff Sinis, and Nicholas Cicero for their help in producing this edition of the American Adversaries Drive Time.
Thank you. whether you know it or not, but I have a new hobby. I am collecting stories that I can actually prove are told among the Russian people. They make them up themselves. They tell them between themselves. Reveals they got a great sense of humor. And they've also got a little cynical attitude about things in their country. And one of these stories, the one I'm going to tell you, I told to General Secretary Gorbachev. And he laughed. The story was an American and a Russian arguing about their two countries. And the American said, look, in my country, I can walk into the Oval Office, I can pound the president's desk and say, Mr. President, I don't like the way you're running our country. And the Russian said, I can do that. The American said, you can? He says, yes. I can go into the Kremlin, to the General Secretary's office, pound his desk and say, Mr. General Secretary, I don't like the way President Reagan's running his country. I've been collecting stories, jokes, that I can absolutely establish are told by the people behind the Iron Curtain in the communist bloc, which reveal they've got a great sense of humor, but they've also got a pretty cynical attitude toward their system. And this one has to do with the fact that in the Soviet Union, if you want to buy an automobile, there is a 10-year wait. And you go through quite a process when you're ready to buy, and then you put up the money in advance. So there was a young fellow there that had finally made it, and he was going through all the bureaus and agencies that he had to go through and signing all the papers, and finally got to that last agency where they put the stamp on it. And the man then that had made the final stamp of the paper, taking the money, said, all right, come back in 10 years and get delivery of your car. And he said, morning or afternoon? And the fella said, well, 10 years from now, what difference does it make? He said, the plumber's coming in the morning.
Friend, we sing the mass. Speaker, Mr. President, distinguished members of the Congress, honored guests, and fellow citizens. Today marks my first State of the Union address to you, a constitutional duty as old as our republic itself. President Washington began this tradition in 1790 after reminding the nation that the destiny of self-government and the preservation of the sacred fire of liberty is finally staked on the experiment entrusted to the hands of the American people. For our friends in the press who place a high premium on accuracy, let me say, I did not actually hear George Washington say that.
I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit, for political purposes, my opponent's youth and inexperience. You know, I received an invitation that said, please come to Ellis Island July 4th for the 100th birthday celebration of an American institution. Somebody goofed. My birthday isn't until February. And it really won't be my 100th, although I've been around for a while. I can remember when a hot story broke and the reporters would run in yelling, stop the chisels. And I know that a lot of you have been having some fun with my advancing years. You even tied my recent surgery to my age. Well, I got to be honest with you. I had that same operation when I was young, and it felt so good I wanted to have it done again before I was too old. But I am aware of my age. When I go in for a physical now, they no longer ask me how old I am. They just carbon date me.
It reminds me a little bit of a Cub reporter. You knew that something would remind me of a story. Cub reporter whose first solo assignment was interviewing a fellow who was just going to have a birthday that made him the oldest person in town. And he got to the address. It was an older building out in the outskirts of the city, and elderly gentleman ushered him in. He sat down, and the reporter determined he was the man, and he said he was there for the interview, and he led right to the matter about how old are you, and the man said, 96. He said, to what do you attribute your longevity? And the fellow said, I don't smoke, drink, or run around with wild women. And at that moment, there was a crash from upstairs. And the reporter looked up and he said, what was that? And the old boy said, oh, that's Dad. He's drunk again.
Thank you.
I can still remember my first Republican convention. Abraham Lincoln giving a speech that sent tingles down my spine. No, I have to confess, I wasn't actually there. The truth is, way back then, I belonged to the other party.
Thank you all so very much. In all the 36 anniversaries of my 39th birthday, this has certainly been the most memorable. George, Barbara, all of you up here on the top shelf, together with me and all of you, ladies and gentlemen, I am enormously touched. Yesterday is my birthday. 75 years ago, I was born in Tampico, Illinois, a little flat above the bank building. He didn't have any other contact with the bank than that. Now, here I am, sort of living above the store again.
Thank you all very much. Please be seated and welcome to the White House. I always feel self-conscious when I say that, and I say it every time I'm in here, but somehow technically, and that just kind of explains some of the problems of government, that this old executive office building is part of the White House. I haven't put my clothes in a single closet over here.
With this great reception that you've given me, I have to say that there was once upon a time that to be a Republican in this area of the country felt a bit like being Gary Cooper in High Noon, outnumbered in a big way. But I remember the story of a fellow who was running for office as a Republican, and he was in a rural area and it wasn't known to be Republican, and he stopped by a farm to do some campaigning. And when the farmer heard he was a Republican, his jaw dropped and he said, "Wait right here till I go get Ma. She's never seen a Republican before." So he got her, and the candidate looked around for a podium from which to give his speech, and the only thing he could find was a pile of that stuff that Bess Truman took 35 years trying to get Harry to call fertilizer. So he got up on the mound, and when they came back, he gave his speech. And at the end of it, the farmer said, "That's the first time I ever heard a Republican speech." And the candidate said, "That's the first time I've ever given a Republican speech from a Democratic platform."
knew a man, called him Sandy Kane. Few folks even knew his name. But a hero, yes, was he. Left a boy, come back a man. Still many just don't understand about the reasons we are free. I can't forget the look in his eyes or the tears he cried as he said these words to me. All gave some, some gave all, some stood through for the red, white, and blue, and some had to fall. And if you ever think of me, think of all your liberties and recall. Some gave all. Now Sandy Kane is no longer here, but his words are all so clear as they echo throughout our land. All his friends gave us all, stood the ground and took the fall to help their fellow man. Love your country and live with pride, and don't forget those who died. America, can't you see? All gave some, and some gave all, and some stood through for the red, white, and blue, and some had to fall. And if you ever think of me, think of all your liberties and recall. Some gave all. And if you ever think of me, think of all your liberties and recall. Yes, recall. Some gave all. Some gave all.
I'm reading from the autobiography, Memorial Edition, American Sniper, by Chris Kyle. Generally, when SEALs go out for a deployment or come back, we do so very quietly. That's the nature of special operations. There are usually few people around except for our immediate families, sometimes not even them. In this case, because of when I was heading out, it happened that I passed a small group of protesters demonstrating against the war. They had signs about baby killers and murderers and whatever, protesting the troops who were going over to fight. They were protesting the wrong people. We didn't vote in Congress. We didn't vote to go to war. I signed up to protect this country. I do not choose the wars. It happens that I love to fight, but I do not choose which battles I go to. Y'all send me to them. I had to wonder why these people weren't protesting at their congressional offices or in Washington. Protesting the people who were ordered to protect them. Let's just say it put a bad taste in my mouth. I realize not everybody felt that way. I did see signs on some homes supporting the troops saying, "We love you," and that sort of thing. And there were plenty of tearful and respectful send-offs and homecomings, some even on TV. but it was the ignorant protesters I remembered years and years later. And, for the record, it doesn't bother me that SEALs don't have big send-offs or fancy homecomings. We are the silent professionals. We covert operators, and inviting the media to airports is not in the program. Still, it's nice to be thanked every so often for doing our job.
If I had to pick out one speech in 1988 that most represented what I had accomplished over my two terms in office, the following speech I gave on Veterans Day at the Vietnam Memorial in Washington might be the one. I feel very good when people say that one of my accomplishments was restoring the spirit and faith of America, because I tried very hard to do that. I think one area where there may be evidence of this is the attitude toward our Vietnam veterans. A good friend of mine, Dennis LeBlanc, fought in Vietnam. Only three were left alive out of his squadron. When he came back to college, the kids found out he'd been in Vietnam. They called him murderer and shunned him. What kind of welcome home was that for a young man who had risked his life for his country? It hurt when I first heard that story. One of the best letters I ever received as president was from a Vietnam veteran in Texas who said that I'd helped him hold up his head. But if I had anything to do with that, my entire two terms in office would be worth it.
Veterans Day Ceremony, Vietnam Memorial, Washington, D.C., November 11th, 1988.
Before I begin, let me take a moment to congratulate the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund and the other distinguished guests, without whom the construction and operation of this memorial would not have been possible. Let me also say that America is grateful to the hundreds of Vietnam veterans who, when I asked them to join my administration, did so and have and are serving our nation so proudly. For your devotion to America, I salute you. We're gathered today, just as we have gathered before, to remember those who served, those who fought, and those still missing, and those who gave their last full measure of devotion for our country. We're gathered at a monument on which the names of our fallen friends and loved ones are engraved, and with crosses instead of diamonds beside them, the names of those whose fate we do not yet know. One of those who fell wrote shortly before his death these words: "Take what they have left and what they have taught you with their dying, and keep it with your own, and take one moment to embrace those gentle heroes you left behind." Well, today, Veterans Day, as we do every year, we take that moment to embrace the gentle heroes of Vietnam and of all our wars. We remember those who were called upon to give all a person can give. And we remember those who were prepared to make that sacrifice if it were demanded of them in the line of duty, though it never was. Most of all, we remember the devotion and gallantry with which all of them ennobled their nation as they became champions of a noble cause. I'm not speaking provocatively here. Unlike the other wars of this century, of course, there were deep divisions about the wisdom and rightness of the Vietnam War. Both sides spoke with honesty and fervor, and what more can we ask in our democracy? And yet, after more than a decade of desperate boat people, after the killing fields of Cambodia, after all that has happened in that unhappy part of the world, who can doubt that the cause for which our men fought was just? It was, after all, however imperfectly pursued, the cause of freedom, and they showed uncommon courage in its service. Perhaps at this late date, we can all agree that we've learned one lesson: that young Americans must never again be sent to fight and die unless we are prepared to let them win.
But beyond that, we remember today that all our gentle heroes of Vietnam have given us a lesson in something more, a lesson in living love. Yes, for all of them, those who came back and those who did not, their love for their families lives. Their love for their buddies on the battlefields and friends back home lives. Their love of their country lives. This memorial has become a monument to that living love. The thousands who come to see the names testify to a love that endures. The messages and mementos they leave speak with a whispering voice that passes gently through the surrounding trees and out across the breast of our peaceful nation. A childhood teddy bear, a photograph of the son or daughter born too late to know his or her father, a battle ribbon, a note. There are so many of these, and all are testimony to our living love for them. And our nation itself is testimony to the love our veterans have had for it and for us. Our liberties, our values, all for which America stands, is safe today because brave men and women have been ready to face the fire at freedom's front, and we thank God for them. Yes, gentle heroes and living love, and our memories of a time when we faced great divisions here at home. And yet, if this place recalls all this, both sweet and sad, it also reminds us of a great and profound truth about our nation, that from all our divisions, we have always eventually emerged strengthened. Perhaps we're finding that new strength today, and if so, much of it comes from the forgiveness and healing love that our Vietnam veterans have shown. Thank you. For too long a time, they stood in a chill wind as if on a winter night's watch. And in that night, their deeds spoke to us, but we knew them not. Their voices called to us, but we heard them not. Yet in this land that God has blessed, the dawn always at last follows the dark, and now morning has come. The night is over. We see these men and know them once again, and know how much we owe them, how much they've given us, and how much we can never fully repay. And not just as individuals, but as a nation, we say, we love you. These days we show our love in many ways, some of it through the government. We now fly the POW/MIA flag at this memorial on Memorial Day, Veterans Day, and POW/MIA Recognition Day. This is a small gesture, but a significant one. America also keeps a vigil for those who have not yet returned. We have negotiated with the Vietnamese to bring our nation's sons home, and for the first time to have joint teams investigating remote areas of Vietnam that might shed light on the fate of those we list as missing. In Laos, we have also begun a new round of surveys and excavations of crash sites, and we have told Hanoi that it must prove to the American people through its cooperation whether men are still being held against their will in Indochina. Otherwise, we will assume some are, and we will do everything we can to find them. Here at home, a new Department of Veterans Affairs and extended veterans benefits are merely outward and visible signs of an inward and invisible grace that has come to our land. Vietnam service is once more universally recognized as a badge of pride. 4 years ago, I noted that this healing had begun and that I hoped that before my days as Commander-in-Chief were over, it would be completed. Well, now as I approach the end of my service and I see Vietnam veterans take their rightful place among America's heroes, it appears to me that we have healed. And what can I say to our Vietnam veterans but welcome home. Now, before I go, as have so many others, Nancy and I wanted to leave a note at the wall, and if I may, read it to you before doing so. We will put this note here before we leave. Our young friends, yes, young friends, for in our hearts you will always be young, full of the love that is youth, love of life, love of joy, love of country. You fought for your country and for its safety and for the freedom of others with strength and courage. We love you for it. We honor you. And we have faith that as he does all his sacred children, the Lord will bless you and keep you. The Lord will make his face to shine upon you and give you peace now and forevermore. Thank you all, and God bless you.
Just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone. Up and at 'em bright and early, I'm all business in my suit. Yeah, I'm dressed up for success, from my head down to my boots. I don't do it for the money, there's bills that I can't pay. I don't do it for the glory, I just do it anyway. Providing for our futures, my responsibility. Yeah, I'm real good under pressure, being all that I can be. I can't call in sick on Mondays when the weekend's been too strong. I just work straight through the holidays, sometimes all night long. You can bet that I stand ready when the wolf growls at the door. Hey, I'm solid, hey, I'm steady, hey, I'm true down to the core. And I will always do my duty, no matter what the price. I've counted up the cost.
Even patriotic nephew of my Uncle Sam, a rough riding, biting Yankee man.
Okay, folks, that's going to do it. I hope you enjoyed this special edition of the American Adversaries dedicated to all of our veterans. Once again, a big thanks to Nicholas Cicero, Jeff Sinis, and Johnny Guns for help producing this show. We'll see you tomorrow night. Night, everybody.
White and blue, and I'll die a whole lot harder if it comes to where I have to. I'm a black waving patriotic nephew of my Uncle Sam, a rough riding, fighting Yankee man. And when I see old glory waving, I think of all the brave men that have fought and died for what is right and wrong. And when I see old glory burning, my blood begins to churning, and I